that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher.
Come on, hey, everybody.
Hello. This is Stuart.
This is Zach.
And we are the
Back Row Super Show. But this is a me. This is episode 12.
That's right.
These are Loosey Goosey. We just kind of talk about the stuff we've been doing.
Over the week, yeah.
Over the week. Just
things, you know, we're looking forward to, things that we're playing, things we've consumed.
Yeah. Things that aren't probably big enough for a full episode, but it's stuff we've been doing and we find interesting.
Yeah. I'll start it off. So I have been playing this one game. I know you've played it once with me. Monster Prom. So it's a game on Steam. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of a dating sim.
Kind of an RPG
dating sim. But the writing in it is fantastic.
It is.
It's hilarious. You go through, you're a monster in high school, and it's coming up to the big dance, to prom, and you are trying to seduce a couple of other monsters, be them female, be them male, or be them, I don't know. what kind of sex is a blob? I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's a blob with a hat. Blobbert, that's his name.
Blobbert,
yeah. That's his official name.
Judging by that name, probably a dude.
Maybe. Who knows? You can't always judge a book by its name. Anyway, so it's been a lot of fun. The writing in it is fantastic. It's a great game to play with a couple of people, just because it is turn-based. It supports up to four people, which is super cool. It's definitely a party game.
It's definitely unique.
Yeah. Again, the writing is hilarious. You don't really, so your stats kind of affect your choices that you can make, and depending on the choice that you make, you have a stat that affects it. So if you have a high stat in it, you succeed, but if you have a low stat in it, you fail. And depending if you succeed or failed, really affects the person that you're trying to go on a date with to the prom.
Yeah.
The art style is amazing. The artists who did it are super cool.
Their art really sticks out to me because, like, just the characters look really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with Halloween around, they put out a Halloween patch, which was really cool. Yeah.
Nice.
With, like, different skins and stuff like that. Because when we were playing it, I think we were in the summertime patch where they had, like, summertime clothes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, it keeps on getting updates. It's a lot of fun. I've seen a couple people stream it and stuff like that. So, who knows? Maybe that could be out in the future. A stream or a video.
Ooh. Yeah, that would be fun. Because, yeah. I mean, we played through it, what, in like a couple of hours?
Yeah,
like, it's a very quick playing game.
The great thing is it has two modes. It has a long mode, which is about 60 to 90 minutes. And then it has a short mode, which is about 30 to 45 minutes. Depending on if, like, you know, you're reading the dialogue out loud or something like that. I've definitely seen people who've played it on stream who read it out loud, and it's a lot of fun. Like I said, the writing is hilarious. The game is great. Monster Prom, I highly recommend it. Two thumbs up. And who knows, maybe we'll see a playthrough. Maybe I'll wrangle up some friends and and we'll play through.
Yeah.
You're my friend.
Yes.
I can wrangle you.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, yeah, big Halloween thing. It was a lot of fun. A lot of things that I did over this week were Halloween-themed.
So I guess I read through a book and watched a movie, which, they're really the same thing. So it's Futile and Stupid Gesture is the name of the book and the movie.
No.
It was written by Josh Karp, and then Netflix made a movie based off of it.
Oh, cool.
It is a biography of, well, it's a biography of Doug Kinney, who he was one of the founding editors of the National Lampoon.
Oh, okay.
And then, although, like, he didn't really do a whole lot of it. Like, so really, Henry Beard was his partner in this. And he did a lot of what you would traditionally call an editor's role.
Yeah.
Making sure the magazine went out on time. I did not know before I read this, National Lampoon was put out by Weight Watchers.
Weight Watchers? Why? Yeah,
the publishing house the people that owned Weight Watchers put out National Lampoon.
Huh. I guess they were trying to diversify.
No, basically the two guys kind of swindled the publisher into doing it by tricking him into publishing it.
Ah.
They went above and beyond, like, flattering him and making him think he was this, like, comic genius and business magnate and everything.
Hmm.
Yeah, basically they swindled him into a job.
Back in the day when you could do that.
Well, it was, I mean, you know, it's very successful, for a short period of time until most of the writers left.
Yeah.
The magazine had a lot of not politically correct humor. Mm-hmm. But it was also the 70s, different time.
Different time.
60s and 70s. I remember my dad, because it was geared towards people my dad's age in college at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the thing on campus to read.
What's that?
You've probably seen the cover of one of the first few issues, but it's a picture of a dog, like, looking worriedly at this gun that's pointed at him from this disembodied hand. And the title of the issue is, "Buy This Magazine or We'll Kill This Dog."
Oh, wow.
Very surrealist type humor.
Yeah.
I
will tell you, the magazine that kind of was like that for, I guess, my generation or our generation was Mad Magazine.
Yeah, Mad and Cracked, both. Yeah.
Now, was that magazine still being printed when they were doing movies?
Yeah. So basically the way that worked out is they did Animal House, which Doug Kinney based on. One of the writers would contribute stories to to the magazine of his frat boy college days in the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
And so they kind of adapted those and took the idea for the National Lampoon yearbook and jammed them together and made Animal House, which was a huge success that no one predicted. If you're looking close in Animal House, you can see Doug Kinney. He's the yokel. He only has one line in the movie. It's "What the hell are we supposed to do, you stupid moron?"
Did not know that was him.
Yeah. He's the guy that leads the band down the alley. At the end with the parade.
Yeah.
So they made that. He kind of went cocaine crazy in Hollywood. As you did at the time.
I understand.
Made Caddyshack, which was a disaster.
Oh. You know, I've never seen Caddyshack.
So it's a cult classic. Yeah. It's very good now. It did not perform very well, and Kinney hated it. On top of that, at the time, the Zucker brothers made Airplane, which kind of took the wind out of the sails of National Lampoon. It became apparent that other people were able to synthesize what the Lampoon was doing.
Ah, yeah.
Much more quickly. Plus, it didn't help that when SNL went live, Lorne Michaels basically stole the entire editorial staff
from
National Lampoon.
Oh, man.
Because National Lampoon had The Lemmings, which was kind of their traveling comedy show.
Yeah.
Which had Chevy Chase and John Belushi and
Gilda
Radner.
All those
Michael
guys
O'Donohue, O'Donohue and John Belushi were two of the, I think it's the first skit ever on SNL where John Belushi's playing this immigrant learning how to speak. English, and O'Donohue's his English as a second language instructor, and so he gives him these bizarre phrases and then has a heart attack and dies. And then Belushi imitates him because he thinks he's speaking. It's not very funny now, but it is funny to watch.
Yeah.
It's tragic that Doug Kenny died. Like he died at 33. He was in Oahu detoxing from cocaine because it was ruining his life.
Yeah, cocaine will ruin your life. Yeah.
Chevy Chase was his probably one of his closer friends. Still smuggled him in cocaine.
Jeez.
What they did is they ordered tennis balls, and the dealers had just put cocaine in these tennis balls sent it to Hawaii from L.A.
Wow.
And that's how they smuggled that in. But there's a lot of question as to whether he killed himself or he just fell. The joke with the Lampoon writers, because the Lampoon did have a dark sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
The joke around the Lampoon writers is that he fell while he was trying to find a spot to jump off and kill himself. Which
it's kind of dark. Yeah.
That's really dark, but I kind of think it's funny. The movie does a fair job, I guess. Like, they have to change it because there was really only one female writer for the Lampoon at a time. And so they take some liberties with timeline and introduce a more diverse cast than what would actually have.
Yeah.
Well, the one they actually had. It's still a fun movie, and it's an interesting way to do a biopic of a thing that is not animate.
Yeah.
I recommend it. It's on Netflix. Nice. Check it out. The book is a pretty quick read. I want to say it's like 300 or 400 pages.
Yeah, not bad. Got it from the library, or you just found it?
No, I found it online and bought it, and then a couple weeks later, I saw there was this movie on Netflix, and I was like, is this the same? Oh, it is the same thing.
Must have been a sign. Yeah. Nice. Well, talking about Netflix movies, I ended up watching The Babadook.
Oh, you just watched it?
Yeah. For Halloween, because it's scary. It was okay. It wasn't, like, great or anything. I understand what they were trying to represent of, like, a woman or a mother who has lost her partner and trying to raise this kid. And she's kind of going through that, like, separation anxiety with the kid. How, like...
I didn't get separation anxiety. Really? I got, like, it was more focused on guilt.
Guilt of?
Failing as a parent.
Oh.
Or fear of failing as a parent.
I thought it was more of that, like, kind of survivor's guilt. That, like, she didn't die. And then there's that whole, interesting dynamic of, like, you know, when a mother has their kid, they go into that depression.
Oh, the postpartum?
Yeah. Where it could be a little bit of that, where she wanted to, you know, kill the kid and everything like that.
Maybe.
But, for...
That kid is a little monster, though.
Yeah. God, man. Hopefully all kids aren't like that. Like, if I ever have a kid... I want my kid to be a little monster, but again, he was seen a literal monster, and he was trying to protect his mom.
Was he, though?
He could be. I mean, she did capture the Babadook. Spoilers.
Whatever.
It's a very old movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, apparently the Babadook is like this gay icon now.
I know. What's that about?
Because it's a weird thing.
It's a weird thing to lash on to.
Okay, like, I guess that's cool.
Because the Babadook does kind of look a little silly. Like, when you see the Babadook legit, like, not in the book, but, like, here's the Babadook character and everything like that, it's kind of wacky, and you're like, that's what I'm afraid of?
Yeah.
But I believe that's more a symbolic thing than anything else.
Yeah.
That she is, like... captured, and she's now managed this guilt, depression, whatever.
Yeah.
And she's learning to live with it and, like, you know, feed it on particular times, like at the end when she was feeding it worms and whatnot. But it was nonetheless an interesting movie. But yeah, I've seen it, like, dressed up in rainbow colors and, like,
a rainbow hat.
Yeah. And he's just smiling with his giant fingers and stuff like that. It's a very strange character to, like, gravitate to for that particular culture. But, you know.
Go for it.
Go for it. I mean, take weird things. Maybe, maybe Freddy Krueger can be, you know.
Yeah.
somebody for some group or something along
those lines. Oh, Freddy Krueger is a, I would wager a guess that the only people that Freddy Krueger could possibly represent would be pedophiles, since he was a child molester.
I did not know that he was a child molester. So that was one
of
his things?
The original story Wes Craven wrote, yes. Oh. In the movie, the studio execs said, we're not making a movie about a child molester. And so they say explicitly he was a child killer.
Oh.
But when they did the remake, they went back to the original, like, no, he was like, touching these kids inappropriately. Like, and he just ended up killing some of them.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Interesting bit of horror movie trivia for you.
A little bit of horror movie trivia. But yeah, it was a decent movie. Like, it's not bloody and gory. There are a bit of jump scares. And with jump scares, I'm okay with jump scares, but jump scares are like the cheapest kind of scares. Because it's not you're not afraid, you're just startled. You're like, oh, I'm startled. But, you know, I do like movies that have that dread. That, like, dripping dread of you're really connected to a particular character and you're want to see that character prevail or survive or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like horror movies are one of those things that can be aged out of very quickly, because once you start picking up on the tropes and the beats of a horror movie, it's very difficult to not be expecting what's coming up.
Yeah.
Unless something is just, like, off the wall different, like Mandy, or like It Follows was fun, I thought.
Yeah, you know, another one, Quiet Place was a really good scary movie.
Is that a horror movie? Or is it like a sci-fi? I thought you said it was like a sci-fi.
I'm not sure it was classified as a horror movie, but there are horror elements to it.
Okay, fair.
Just the use of music, suspenseful parts. There are many times when, you know, you're on the edge of your seat.
Sure.
And you're really, because they did great character development, you're really worried about what's going to happen to a particular character or something along those lines.
Cool.
Which is interesting. And it's interesting that they show the monster design at the very beginning of the movie. So you're not, like, wondering what the monster looks like, sort of like a Cloverfield thing of, like, oh, I'm very suspenseful about, like, what it looks like. But anyway.
Man, thank you, J.J. Abrams.
Babadook.
Yes, Babadook.
It's an okay movie. If you have the time to watch it, I would watch it, but I wouldn't, like, go out of my way to watch it. Yeah, I mean, it's on Netflix, so you can watch it on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Netflix. Oh, yeah. Okay. Have you seen it? Yeah. Yeah, I saw it, I didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it shortly after it came to digital.
Okay. Because, yeah, it's a, I think it's an Australian-made movie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so I don't think it had, like, a really big theatrical opening here in the States.
I want to say that I saw it on the sign, at least, at the Midtown, around the corner.
Well, I mean, Midtown shows a bunch of weird things.
And then probably just L.A. and New York got screenings.
Okay.
I would guess.
Yeah. But yeah, so if you have Netflix and you kind of have, like, an hour and a half to burn and you want to see a decent movie, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's me.
Okay. So I read a graphic novel that you lent me.
Oh,
called,
yeah.
Matt Kent. It's by Matt Kent. Kind.
Yeah.
Called Revolver.
Yeah.
Really good graphic novel. It's a limited series. It's just a single trade. I don't know if it was released separately.
I'm not sure, because the one that I got was an advanced copy. So, yeah, I worked at a bookstore, and I got it as an advanced reader. They occasionally gave out, you know, copies, readers, to us just so we can read it and recommend the book.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is actually a good strategy, and it means you get to stockpile things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I remember when we were living together, just being like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I really like this. This is cool.
Yeah, I had quite the collection of different books. Not all advanced readers. You know, we would get other books, and I would buy books because I had that discount.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what did you
So think I of it? Really liked it. So basically the story is it's a side-by-side parallel story. The character in it, every night at 11:11, when he falls asleep, he's transported to this other timeline where some disaster has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of post-apocalyptic, kind of Walking Dead-y, but with no zombies. Like, it's just people trying to survive.
Yeah, it's a post-apocalyptic, like, some war happened or something along those lines.
Yeah. And then when he goes to sleep in Otherworld, he wakes back up as if it were a dream, but those things that happened in the dream world are actually can't affect him. Like, if he were to die, I would assume he would die in real life.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think it was a dream world. I do think it was an alternate reality.
Or, yeah, the other timeline he slips into.
Yeah.
It's kind of a head fuck to read. Mm-hmm. They do a very good job of delineating which timeline you're in based on the margins of the book, which is really helpful.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I don't know why this hasn't been optioned for a movie yet.
Yeah.
Because like, it's short. Like, it's not like an ongoing series. It's just, what would you say that is? Like 180 pages?
Yeah.
Maybe 200 pages?
It's a larger, yeah, it's one of the larger graphic novels. But again, it's kind of telling two stories. And I really enjoy at the very bottom of the page, there's a little ticker that has all of the particular news items of the day. And it's really cool just to sort of see what's going on.
Exactly.
And it's just more storytelling, more world building, which is really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. Honestly, I have no idea why this has not been optioned for. Like, it's ripe for it because it's basically you could take that comic and use it as a storyboard.
Yeah, and the publishing is Vertigo?
Yeah, it's Vertigo.
Vertigo, yeah. And they publish a lot of interesting graphic novels.
I love their stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was that.
Nice.
You just have the one thing, right?
Yeah, just one. I've been watching TwitchCon and BlizzCon. I've been seeing a couple of, I guess, announcements from Blizzard, which is super cool. They've announced the new Hearthstone expansion.
Oh, what is the new expansion?
So, I don't have the name of it off the top of my head. I should have looked it up. But it's sort of like an arena fighting sort of deal. They just announced it. There's not really many cards that have been spoiled.
So that's what it's going to be?
It's the theme is like
arena
sort of like fighting deal.
I was about to say, they're changing the genre.
No, they're not changing the genre. They all have like particular themes and stuff. Like last theme was mech sort of like in a weird scientist sort of deal, which is, it's cool because they explore the different aspects of the World of Warcraft lore, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I saw that they're remastering Warcraft 3, which is super cool. They threw in a new character in the Overwatch. It's McCreed's partner, or not partner, I guess his nemesis. She looks really cool. She's a sniper character.
Now, I will say, going back to the Warcraft 3 remaster, that looks awesome as hell.
Yeah.
I remember playing that when I was in high school.
Yeah, it's going to be fun playing it again.
I'm curious to see if the world has is, like, fine with having RTSs, or if that's just a genre of game that people don't do anymore.
I mean, people because of MOBAs. Still play StarCraft.
Do they, though? Like, isn't it just competitive players that do that?
Maybe. I mean, I don't play it, and, like...
Yeah.
I will probably buy World of War... Or not World... Warcraft 3 for nostalgia.
Like, oh, yeah, value. Totally, yeah.
I'll probably clock in maybe an hour or two, just because I'm not a big fan of RTSs.
Oh.
But...
See, I liked playing through the campaign. Even then, I hated playing against other people online, because it's just a toxic cesspool of humanity.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I'll probably play through the campaigns. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's in 4K.
It looks like, great. And that's the thing with Blizzard. Blizzard polishes everything so well.
Yeah.
These release, like, trailers and videos are super great. Like, I believe... the announcement of the new Overwatch character, it was called Reunion. But it's... Again, we've talked about Blizzard and stuff like that, but they know how to throw their money around and say, make something good, and it usually...
Well, they have enough of it.
Yeah. It usually turns out pretty good. Throw enough money at a problem, it's going to go away.
Well, so, from what I saw, too, with BlizzCon... not to hijack your...
Yeah. I'm pretty much done.
The thing with BlizzCon, they didn't announce anything new other than Diablo Immortal.
Yeah.
Which, how do you feel about Diablo Immortal? It's the... for anyone who hasn't followed it, it's the Diablo version for your phone.
Yeah, I just don't like playing games on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, same.
I have a smaller phone. I have a 4S. iPhone, and it's got a small screen, so I will occasionally play Hearthstone on my phone, but I usually prefer a larger screen or something on my computer.
You know who I bet this is for?
Kids?
Is
people playing Fortnite?
No, not for kids. I bet that this is for Asian markets.
It could be. It could be.
I mean, it's... If they put it on the App Store, like, they know that they'll probably get a couple hundred thousand downloads.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if this is, you know what I mean. If they make it downloadable for phones here, they'll probably get a couple hundred thousand downloads. Mm-hmm. But I bet it will go like crazy in like Korea and Hong Kong.
Did they say if it was going to be a free to play or?
I didn't see. I can't imagine that it would be. Yeah. They typically don't do.
I don't know. I mean,
free to play on phones
with Diablo. There's so much loot. I'm sure you could, like...
They may do an auction house again. Yeah. They may implement that.
That would be weird. But yeah, that's basically it for me.
Okay. Well, my last thing is the... I listened to the album again that my wife got me actually last Christmas. one of them. Yeah. Is a it's a pressing of the Doors' first album.
Oh, cool.
God, it sounds so good on vinyl. I know, like, scientifically, there's really...
No difference?
No difference that a human can perceive, necessarily. I don't know. Like, there's something about the tactile nature of, like, rather than just clicking a button and having it play. Because I have it digitally as well.
Yeah.
But, like, this was the first band that I, like, really got into on my own. And so, like, there's something about... like the tactile nature of de-sleeving a record, wiping it down, putting it on a turntable, and listening to it, that like makes me appreciate it more because I feel like there's more like ritual involved
with
getting it to work.
Yeah.
So for anyone that doesn't know, came out in 1967, so it's not exactly like brand spanking new.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's the Doors.
Yeah, like, the thing that I love really long songs. So there's two songs on here that are like 7 minutes plus. The End and Light My Fire. According to people I know who have worked at college radio stations, or radio stations in general, if a DJ puts on Light My Fire or Stairway to Heaven, they're pooping. Like, it's so that they can be away from the desk for, like, more than 2 minutes. Which is funny. I was doing some digging, and some background for this, because I like to share interesting facts. In 2015, this was added to the National Recording Registry by the Library of Congress.
Nice.
Also, and it makes sense because it came out in 67, this was only recorded on 4 tracks, which, you know, digitally we can have as many tracks as we want.
Yeah.
Back in the day, a 4-track, like Elvis and stuff, that's 1 track. Like, the band is playing behind him live as he's singing. That's why drums are not very prominent.
Yeah.
Because the drummer was probably playing on an unsnared snare with some brushes and may have had a cymbal. With the Doors, though, in 67, they had 4-track recording, which meant that, the way each track is composed, each song space on the album is composed. 1 track is bass and drums. Another track is guitar and organ. A 3rd track is just the vocals, and the 4th track is just left open for overdubs. Like, if you want to add another guitar line, or you want to add some color to the song and have, like, maracas or something like that.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and contrary to popular belief, the Doors did have a bass player for their studio sessions.
Yeah.
Just live, their organ player would play a little Fender bass box with his left hand. So,
jeez.
Well, I mean, that's what a piano player's doing anyway. Yeah, it's true, just like, you're playing the bass notes with your left hand. It just, it looks more impressive because it's a second instrument.
Yeah.
Like, it's a second deck. But, if you listen to an album in the 60s and there's a studio session or a studio bass player on it, and it was on the West Coast, I want to say that this lady only worked for Elektra and Capitol, really. I can't remember her name. I want to say it's like Gail Simon or Gail Simmons. But she was just this like single mother, and she just played bass on like pretty much anything that was recorded in LA at the time. Yeah. Like,
that's pretty cool.
She's just this bass player in the background. But yeah, she did a lot of the stuff with the Doors. I think Beach Boys too, but that may be not true. But yeah, so the Doors do have a bass player in the studio. The album sounds fantastic. If you've never listened to it, go listen to it. It's just a single LP, so it's less than, what would that be? It's probably around 40 minutes or so. So it's not a huge chunk of time.
Nah.
Probably less time than an average podcast. So go listen to it. Not one of ours. I'm just saying in general. Yeah. All the ones I listen to are like an hour and a half long. Like,
we've got some hour and a half hours.
Yeah, we've also got some 3 hours. but that was my last thing.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this session of Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. As always, we are Stuart and Zach.
Zach.
Oh, yeah. I should let you say your name.
And
this is the Back Row Super Show. You can find us on Facebook.
Yep. Four separate words,
yeah. You can also email us at
backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Exactly. We're always looking forward to feedback, constructive feedback. And, just reach out and say hey to us. We always like the haze.
Yeah, fuck you, Jimmy, for saying you suck and should die. Fuck you.
Okay. Just hating on Jimmy like that. All right, man. I guess we will talk to you all next week.
Yeah, the current book club book is World War Z.
Yep.
We'll cover that in another couple weeks,
probably. Yeah. And Nerd Fight's still going on, so go over to the web, our Facebook, and check that out.
Yeah, lots of twists and turns.
Yeah.
Lots of twists and turns with that. That will be a good coverage.
Things that I did not expect.
Yep.
Yep.
Some close calls as well.
I know. I'm hurting for my Sailor Moon.
I know. I know. So I voted close. For Sailor Moon too.
So close.
But yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
All right, see you guys.
Bye.
The time you hesitate is through. The time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my